This takes us to another of our problems. Who can blame a celebrity for not smelling an absence? There are not only wise men, there are wise dogs, we learn. The Wolf Committee heard of Monarch, the celebrated bloodhound. This celebrity was sent for, and when he arrived, it was with such a look of sagacity that the sheep farmer's troubles were supposed to be over. The wise dog was put on what was supposed to be the trail of the wolf. But, if there weren't any wolf, who can blame a celebrated bloodhound for not smelling something that wasn't? The wise dog sniffed. Then he sat down. It was impossible to set this dog on the trail of a wolf, though each morning he was taken to a place of fresh slaughter. Well, then, what else is there in all this? If, locally, one of the most celebrated intellects in England could not solve the problem, it may be that the fault was in taking it up locally. Throughout my time of gathering material for this book, it was my way to note something, and not to regard it as isolated, and to search widely for other occurrences that might associate with it. So, then, I noted this wolf story, and I settled upon this period, of the winter of 1904-5, with the idea of collecting records of seemingly most incongruous occurrences, which, however, might be germs of correlations. Such as this, for instance, but what could one of these occurrences have to do with the other? That in this winter of 1904-5, there were two excitements in Northumberland. One was the wolf hunt, and the other was a revival craze, which had spread from Wales to England. At the time of the wolf hunt, there was religious mania in Northumberland. Men and women staggered, as they wept and shouted, bearing reeling lights, in delirious torchlight processions. If Monarch, the celebrated bloodhound, sniffed and then sat down, I feel, myself, that the trail cannot be picked up in Hexham. It was a time of widespread, uncanny occurrences in Great Britain. But in no account of any one uncanny occurrence have I read of any writer's awareness that there were other uncanny occurrences, or more than one or two other uncanny occurrences. There were many special scares, at this time, in Great Britain. There was no general scare. The contagions of popular delusions cannot be lugged in, as a general explanation. Strange, luminous things, or beings, were appearing in Wales. In Wales had started one of the most widely hysterical religious revivals of modern times. A light in the sky and a pious screech I sniff, but I don't sit down. A wolf and a light and a screech. There are elaborate accounts of the luminous things, or beings, in the PROCSPR, volume 19, and in the first volume of the Occult Review. We are told that, over the piously palpitating Principality of Wales, shining things travelled, stopping and descending when they came to a revival meeting, associating in some unknown way with these centres of excitation, especially where Mrs. Mary Jones was the leader. There is a story of one shining thing that persistently followed Mrs. Jones' car, and was not shaken off, when the car turned abruptly from one road to another. So far as acceptability is concerned, I prefer the accounts by newspaper men. It took considerable to convince them. Writers, sent to Wales by London newspapers, set out with blithe incredulity. Almost everybody has a hankering for mysteries, but it is likely to be an abstract hankering, and when a mystery comes up in one's own experience, one is likely to treat it in a way that warns everybody else that one is not easily imposed upon. The first reports that were sent back by the Londoners were flippant, but, in the London Daily Mail, February 13, 1905, one of these correspondents describes something like a ball of fire, which he saw in the sky, a brilliant object that was motionless for a while, then disappearing. Later he came upon such an appearance, near the ground, not 500 feet away. He ran toward it, but the thing disappeared. Then Bernard Redwood was sent, by the Daily Mail, to investigate. In the mail, February 13, he writes that there were probably will-o'-the-wisps, helped out by practical jokers. As we very well know, there are no more helpful creatures than practical jokers, but, as inquiry stoppers, will-o'-the-wisps have played out. A conventionalist, telling the story, today, would say that they were luminous bats from a chapel belfry, and that a sexton had shot one. Almost every writer who accepted that these things were, thought that in some unknown, or unknowable, way, they were associated with the revival. It is said that they were seen hovering over chapels. According to my methods, I have often settled upon special periods, gathering data, with the idea of correlating, but I have never come upon any other time in which were reported so many uncanny occurrences. There were teleportations in a butcher shop, or things were mysteriously flying about, in a butcher shop, in Port Madoc, Wales. The police were called in, and they accused a girl who was employed in the butcher shop. She made a full confession, News of the World, February 26. A ghost in Barmouth, no details, Barmouth Advertiser, January 12. Most of the records are mere paragraphs, but the newspapers gave considerable space to reported phenomena in the home of Mr. Howell, at Lampeter, Wales. As told in the London Daily News, February 11 and 13, mysterious knockings were heard in this house, and crowds gathered outside. The Bishop of Swansea and Professor Harris investigated, but could not explain. Crowds in the street became so great that extra police had to be called out to regulate traffic, but nothing was learned. There were youngsters in this house, but they did not confess. Mr. Howell had what is known as standing, in his community. It's the housemaid, or the girl in a butcher shop, with parents who presumably haven't much standing, who is knocked about, or more gently slugged, or perhaps only slapped on the face, who confesses, or is said to have confessed. Also, as told in the Liverpool Echo, February 15, there was excitement at Rhymney, Wales, and investigations that came to nothing. Tapping sounds had been heard, and strange lights had been seen, in one of the revival centres, the Salvation Army Barracks. Whether these lights were like the other lights that were appearing in Wales, I cannot say. It was the assertion of the Reverend J. Evans and other investigators, who had spent a night in the barracks, that they had seen very bright lights. In the Southern Daily Echo, February 23, is an account of mysterious rappings on a door of a house in Crewe, and of a young woman, in the house who was said to have dropped dead. A physician pronounced her dead. But there was an inquest, and the coroner said, there is not a single sign of death. Nevertheless, she was officially dead, and she was buried, anyway. I am too dim in my notions of possible correlations, to go into details, but, along with my supposition that ordinarily catalepsy is of rare occurrence, I note that I have records of three persons, who, in this period, were aroused from trances, in time to save them from being buried alive. There are data of strange suicides, that I shall pass over. I have several dozen records of mysterious fires, in this period. Slaughter in Northumberland farmers, who could, housing their sheep, at night others setting up lanterns in their fields. Monarch, the celebrated bloodhound, who could not smell something that perhaps was not, got no more space in the newspapers, and, to a woman, the inhabitants of Hexham stopped sending him chrysanthemums. But faith in celebrities kept up, as it always will keep up, and when the Hungarian wolf hunter appeared, the only reason that a brass band did not escort him, in showers of torn-up telephone books, is that, away back in this winter, Hexham, like most of the other parts of England, was not yet Americanized. It was before the English were educated. The moving pictures were not of much influence then. The Hungarian wolf hunter, mounted on a shaggy Hungarian pony, galloped over hills and dales, and, with strange, Hungarian hunting cries, made what I think is called the welkin ring. He might as well have sat down and sniffed. He might as well have been a distinguished general, or admiral, at the outbreak of a war. Four sheep were killed at Low Eshels, and one at Sedham, in one night. Then came the big hunt, of December 20, which, according to expectations, would be final. The big hunt set out from Hexham, gamekeepers, woodmen, farmers, local sportsmen, and sportsmen from far away. There were men on horseback, and two men in traps, a man on a bicycle, and a mounted policeman, two women with guns, one of them in a blue walking dress, if that details any good to us. They came wandering back, at the end of the day, not having seen anything to shoot at. Some said that it was because there wasn't anything. Everybody else had something to say about Capt. Baines. The most unpopular person, in the north of England, at this time, was Capt. Baines, of Shotley Bridge. Almost every night, something, presumably Capt. Baines' wolf, even though there was no findable statement that a wolf had been seen, was killing and devouring sheep. In Brighton, an unknown force, or thing, struck notes on a musical instrument, Daily Mail, December 24. Later, there were stories of a phantom bicyclist near Brighton, London Daily Mirror, February 6. In the Jour SPR, 13-259, is published somebody's statement that, near the village of Hobenham, he had seen something that looked like a large dog turn into a seeming donkey. Strange sounds heard near Bolton, Lancashire, nothing but the beating of a rope against a flagstaff. Then it was said that a figure had been seen, Lloyd's Weekly News, January 15. A doorbell was mysteriously ringing, at Blackheath, London, police watching the house, but unable to find out anything, Daily Mirror, February 13. But in not one of these accounts is shown knowledge that, about the same time, other accounts were being published. Look in the publications of the SPR, and wonder what that society was doing. It did investigate two of the cases told of in this chapter, but no awareness is shown of a period of widespread occurrences. Other phenomena, or alleged phenomena, a ghost, at Exeter Deanery, no details, Daily Mail, December 24. Strange sounds and lights, in a house in Epworth, Liverpool Echo, January 25. People in Bradford thought that they saw a figure enter a clubhouse. Police notified fruitless search, Weekly Dispatch, January 15. At Edinburgh, Mr. J. E. Newlands, who held the Fulton chair, at the United Free College, saw a figure moving beside him, Weekly Dispatch, April 16.